Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
This episode is brought to you by Patreon.com/SBFVGS. Welcome to Super Best Friends Video Game Sleepover, episode 117. You're listening to the number one video game podcast on the internet that features my best friends. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Redding. Joining me is Mike, the platinum paleontologist, Lopez.
Oh, dinosaur stuff?
Mike, did you change professions?
Dinosaurs.
Dino DNA. They got stuck in the sap.
He's digging up those trophies, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Digging up those plats. And the other voice you're hearing is David the Scythian Tate.
The what-ian?
The Scythian.
I don't know what this means.
From Super Brothers, Sword and Sorcery, as we all know.
Oh, that is a reference to the fact that we have Jim Guthrie on our podcast in just a couple minutes.
Yes, indeed. Later on in the show, we are very honored to be welcoming super guest friend Jim Guthrie. Man, it's a fantastic conversation. We already recorded it in the past, you guys. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some witch magic, but you're going to hear it after this part.
Yes. So, and it's very good. And
so good.
Fantastic interviews with Jim. And we thank him for being here. But before we get to that, the Super Best Friends Video Game Sleepover Podcast comes to you every fortnight with each of us coming to the table to discuss one burning topic from the world of gaming.
That was intense.
What are you gentlemen playing at?
Me?
Go for it. Okay. Go for it.
I've been playing that Division 2.
Yeah.
That just came out.
What do you think? What do you think of this game?
So here's the thing. I went right from playing Anthem, and I beat Anthem. Mm-hmm. And I uninstalled Anthem and installed Division 2. That's how that worked. not dissing on Anthem. We can talk about that in a second. But right now I'm talking about Division 2. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. It's
cool.
So I haven't played with anyone else yet. I've just been playing by myself. But there's just like this giant Ubisoft map with lots of things to do. Lots of fun little side missions. The world itself is fun and like it feels full, like in the Division 1, one thing I noticed is like New York City was very well rendered, like down to the streets. Like they skipped streets here and there, but for the most part, it was a pretty large section of Midtown. It felt pretty stripped down, and there weren't a lot of people on the streets. You know, it was just kind of like it almost kind of felt like a still life of New York City.
Sure.
That you could just like walk through with like frozen holograms that you would eventually see stories in and stuff. And this world in Washington, D.C., it feels more lived in, that you have like groups of bad guys just randomly in the streets. You have groups of friendlies that are sometimes in battles with bad guys that you just kind of walk up on. And I think it's random. I haven't figured out if there's like a rhyme or reason to it yet. And it's just really cool. And like I'm finding like cell phones that are ringing out in the field, and I pick them up and I hear like dialogue that was recorded, or I found some holograms like in the first game where there's like little vignettes that play out. But the map is really big, and it just feels like there's just so much to do.
That's awesome.
And it's fun. And like, you know, the story's still kind of ridiculous. Like, you know, I'm a sleeper agent that has free reign to do whatever. And did you have a gun? I had a gun or whatever. Like, you like it's just a weird, like it's like heavy handed. But then like all the cutscenes, you have a silent protagonist. So they just kind of like smirk throughout the entire cutscene and don't say anything. So it's just
smirking their way through the apocalypse. Yeah,
it's it's not realistic at all. But but then it kind of is, and it's just it's the tone is weird, but the game is fun. Yeah. So I'm liking it. I hear the end game is good. I haven't gotten there yet, obviously, but yeah, it's fun. But let's now go back to the last open world shooter I was just playing, known as Anthem.
Yes. I'm interested to hear the comparison because, of course, they're very directly competing with each other.
Yeah, they're they're both, you know, games as a service. They want to take over your life, and that is your life now. This is my life now, you know. That's like Destiny 2 is still really good at that. I have a bunch of friends that are still like super sucked in, like friend of the show Joe King. He's playing every weekend, you know, like that's his weekend. So I'm trying so hard not to be mean. I said this on the last episode too, like
it's all right. We want to know your honest thoughts and opinions.
So I love BioWare. I don't want anything bad to happen to BioWare.
I want them to survive and make me more Mass Effect games.
Yeah. I would,
and Dragon Age.
I wouldn't be upset if they didn't keep working on Anthem. I played through the whole campaign. I'm ready to give it a pizza rating. And I'm gonna rate it 3 out of 5 pizzas.
That's not bad.
Okay.
Because the gameplay is good. Maybe 2.5. Actually, I'm gonna make it 2.5. Okay. Half.
Yeah. Getting a little rougher.
The gameplay is fun. Okay. Flying around in those giant robots, really fun.
Robots.
Yeah, and those giant robots that you're flying around in, it's really cool. But the world itself feels pretty dead. Not a whole lot going on in there. Every mission is like a mix and match of like 4 or 5 different things that you can do. Like one of them is you stand on a platform and wait for a meter to fill up, and then that's done with you're just shooting enemies the whole time that meter's filling up. Another one is like collect a bunch of things and bring them to one location, and then you know, you finish that objective. Another one is kill the boss. And so you got like these 5 different things that you do in each encounter. And like each mission is like 3 or 4 of those different encounters stringed back to back. And then that's a mission. And only a couple missions in the game broke away from that particular mold. The opening mission, the last mission, and there's like 1 or 2 other missions in the middle that kind of do unique new things. And also there are actually 2 strongholds I never played. Strongholds are like the if you played Destiny, they're called strikes in Destiny. In Anthem they call them strongholds. Throughout the entire campaign you only unlock 1 of them. So you can do that over and over again if you want. But then after you beat the game, 2 more unlock. But they're also story missions that you've played in the game too.
Yeah.
So I have played the strongholds. I just haven't played them as strongholds. But anyway, all that to say, the story of Anthem, I don't know what happened. I don't really know. I played the whole game. I don't really know what happened. Like, I was told a bunch of things that happened in the past. Didn't see them necessarily. I saw like a cutscene that showed what happened in the past, but I had nothing to do with it. So I was like, okay, what does that have to do? And like, there was a bad guy that didn't do a whole lot. You know, there was like, there were other characters that did things. And I just didn't.
Backstory, yeah, the game.
It was weird. It didn't live up to a BioWare story to me. Sure. But I will say one positive thing it did do is make me really want to reinstall Mass Effect and finish my playthrough of those games. So
nice.
I might do that. And I was streaming Mass Effect 2 and then I just kind of stopped. So maybe I'll pick that up again. I don't know.
You should pick it up as if no time at all has passed and just be like, all right, today's stream.
I look different though than I did on those last streams. You do. So like 60 pounds different. So in a good way, less, but
in a good way, bigger.
Yeah, bigger. Who bigger,
bigger
is better?
Is better.
Yeah. What in the world, Adam? We're psychic
we're synced
linking
up tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, Anthem 2.5 out of 5 pizzas.
Yeah, I think now this is just a hunch. I'm not a game developer.
Yeah.
I think making these kinds of games is hard.
Yeah.
You think so, right?
Because you, I mean, look at Bungie.
It took Bungie like four and a half years to get Destiny to a place where everyone's happy, or not everyone, but people playing it are
the
happy.
The first Division game had a lot of criticism for being too empty.
Yeah.
I think there's probably such a steep learning curve for making this kind of game work that almost nobody gets it right the first time.
Yeah.
And it takes time to evolve.
Yeah.
It.
All of these games take time to be good.
Yeah. My hunch. I think it's tough. I think it's harder than we may think to make one of these and make it good.
Who knows how many people helped BioWare make Anthem, but I do know like five different developers helped Massive make. Was it Massive? Who made The Division 2? Is it? I believe it's Massive.
I can't remember.
Developer Division.
The part
two.
Of the show where we go.
Yeah, it is. It's
things.
Massive. It's massive, but then yes, thank you for that. there are other developers. There were like five other developers that are listed in the opening. Red Storm Entertainment, Ubisoft Annecy, Ubisoft Bucharest, Ubisoft Reflections, Ubisoft Learnington, Ubisoft Shanghai, and Ubisoft Sofia, wherever those are.
Games are getting more and more like movies. Like when you watch the credits of like a Marvel movie, how there's like 45 different visual effects studios listed
at
the end.
That is right. That is correct.
But that's kind of been their MO for like the Assassin's Creed franchise, right? Where there's like 100 studios working on each one of those in order to make something that big happen in that kind of time frame.
Right. Yeah. But as far as we know with Anthem, they're just saying BioWare. So I don't know if they got support.
I think it's all three BioWare studios, though.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Anyway, all that to say, Anthem could be a great game someday, but it's not. Yeah. It's not right now.
For sure.
So,
okay.
So, yeah.
I'm kind of holding off on Anthem. We'll see. If it comes around and I start hearing, oh, the game's awesome now. Like, you know, when you started to hear after Taken King came out on Destiny.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Like, oh, it's great now. It's what it always should have been. Then maybe I'll jump in then.
Yeah. I feel like if everyone started playing Destiny 1 after the Taken King came out, there would be no like, oh, I don't like Destiny. That's not my kind of game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So anyway, all right. Anthem. And then also I have played a bit of Apex Legends, of course, as I must, because I have to be playing one battle royale game at any given time. and I feel like there's one more, but I can't remember what it is right now. What is it called? The Beginner's Guide? Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Beginner's Guide.
Recommended by Nick Suttner on his last appearance. Not the one he was just on, but the one before that.
The previous. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Developed by the...
The Stanley Parable dude.
I did not know what to expect with that game.
Okay. What were your thoughts? Did you finish it?
Yeah, I beat the whole thing. It was like a short, it's like a 2-hour game. It's really good.
Yeah.
If you have Steam, go download it and play it in a two hour sitting. It's like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I definitely want to.
I don't
want to
spoil anything, but this guy's a really good... I don't want to. How do I say it? The guy who made
the game good.
The guy who made the game is a very good writer. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
He's a good communicator.
If you had to give it a pizza rating.
Oh, it's 5 out of 5 pizzas. It's it's really good.
I'm excited.
Plus, what it has going for me is I like really short games. Because I feel like they're respecting my time in a weird way.
I feel accomplished when I beat them, too. Yeah. I'm like, I beat a whole game today.
Yeah, and it's really short and it's interesting. And there's insights on game development, insights on psychology, and, you know, self-exploration. And it's very it's a very interesting game.
It
breaks the fourth wall constantly. So it's really fun. Cool. Yeah, that's it. That's what I've been playing. And I took 1,000 years on that. I'm sorry.
Mike?
I finished up Guacamelee 2.
All right.
Absolutely incredible. Drinkbox Studios, man, they always hit it out of the park. It's such a fun game. I did get the platinum. That's my 45th platinum, I think.
Goodness gracious.
So, yeah. Can't recommend that game enough. If you haven't picked it up already, go get it. super.
Yeah, I've been playing through it with my son. We are, I would say, maybe like 80 or 90% done with the story.
Okay. Yep.
But we've been kind of taking every little detour because we're having so much fun. We kind of stopped plowing through the story and started like getting every chest. So yeah. It's just such a fun game.
Yeah, the content for the game is really, really good.
I really love how they expanded greatly on the Poyo powers. Yeah, there's so many new chicken moves. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I don't know what any of this means.
Fantastic so far, but yeah, I'll probably have a verdict next time. But did you say what did you rate it?
5 out of 5 tacos. Yeah, absolutely.
5 out of 5 tacos. My goodness, my gosh.
Your rating system seems to work the best for like. The Guacamelee games, you know.
It's totally fair. I mean a good way to stress how good that game is after you beat it, it unlocks hard mode, and you have to beat hard mode in order to get the platinum. So
So you beat it just twice.
Beat the whole thing again.
back to back. Like, I finished it, and I was like, cool, I'm going to start right over and play the whole thing again.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can't gush enough about how funny the writing is in that game.
It's really fantastic.
There's a part that, and I messaged Nick Suttner after I hit this part in the game, and mm-hmm. I was like, man,
tell me you wrote this.
Did you write this? Cause I laughed for like a solid 3 minutes, like after I got to this part.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, I don't think I wrote that, but hey, it was a good gag. So that was pretty great.
The Street Fighter gags in that are some of my favorite scenes Street in that Fighter. Game. Without spoiling
oh my
anything.
Gosh. Yeah. With no spoilers, but the Street Fighter reference, fantastic.
It's very good.
So
I played that. It was fantastic. And then what else did I play? I played a little bit Apex, actually. Dave and I
last game of the night we won.
Awesome.
And it was wonderful.
I need you guys to carry me to a victory in Apex.
Adam, you need to play video games during human hours, and I will happily do that for you.
Human hours on the West Coast time zone.
Right. Those are still not human hours.
And then I've just started The Witness, but I haven't played enough to really talk about it too much.
Okay. You haven't? I'm so excited you're playing The Witness. I hope it gets into your dreams the way it got into mine.
Mike, I think the correct way to phrase that would have been, I haven't witnessed enough of The Witness yet.
I get it.
See?
Oh, yeah. Dirty dog.
See what it did? You just do that.
Right. Is there anything else?
No, that's it for me.
All right. So, of course, I've been playing Guacamelee 2. Almost done with that. Loving life. Also playing a fair bit of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate on the Switch. That is... I actually, after... I think I talked about this on the show recently, but my son and I, we played it and we played it and we played it, and basically just, I finally hammered that game into myself, and now I enjoy it. So it took me like 15 years and like buying 4 different versions of that game before I finally started liking it.
That's but, amazing.
It can happen for you too, folks.
It could. Adam, help me remember, do you have a main character? Who's your favorite?
Sheik,
that's right. Cool. Do you have any like secondaries that you like when you feel like mixing it up? Do you switch to anyone else, or are you just Sheik all the time?
I'm Sheik all the time because I'm not good enough at the game to switch characters.
Okay. All right.
But if I was going to switch, I probably would go with like, I mean, every once in a while I'll switch it up and I'll grab Samus or something.
Okay.
So I think we need to move on to the
All right, now, Adam, we have a very lengthy interview coming up, so we need you to rein in your
I'm doing
your ambitious.
I'm just gonna do
news.
Yeah, I'm just gonna do the top 20 stories. That's all. Because I know we got to get to
rein
this
it in,
interview,
and then we just spent like 25 minutes going over.
I know. I know.
Yeah, so we do have a fantastic interview with Mr. Jim Guthrie coming up, so I will keep it short and sweet. There were all these rumors flying around that Sony might be acquiring Take-Two, the Grand Theft Auto publisher, of course, and that has now been quashed, that rumor.
Yeah, so it could be them. Adam, you were saying, or who was saying this? It could be them like trying to like dive the stocks of Take-Two down so they can make a lower offer when they actually purchase them.
Oh, that'd be dirty.
It would be
real dirty.
But it might work.
Yeah, so that was an interesting rumor. For a second there, people were speculating, like, oh my gosh, could Grand Theft Auto 6 be a PS5 exclusive? You know, all these kinds of things. That would be insane. Such a huge... I mean, it would be like when GTA 3 was a PS2 exclusive for a couple of years there, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy, crazy times. But moving along, xCloud streaming service has been shown off. This was back on Tuesday, the 12th of March. Xbox revealed kind of their plans and some of the tech behind the Azure Cloud... xCloud game streaming service, which is just about a week before Google's big future of gaming event.
Yeah, everyone's getting in on the streaming thing. I still think our current infrastructure is not fast enough for this, but you know, everyone. Yeah,
it really depends on where you are.
It depends on where you are, and it depends on what kind of frame rate you want to be playing at. If you want to play at 30 frames per second, 1080p. Our infrastructure is okay for that now. But if you want to play anything higher than 1080p and anything higher than 30 frames per second, you're not going to have a fun time. It's not really feasible at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the cool thing about this is that Microsoft was saying this is not an attempt to phase out consoles, right? This is a supplementary thing. This will allow you to, you know, if you have the... If you say you're at, you know... You're at your in-laws' house for the weekend. Everyone's asleep. You pull out your phone. You pull out an Xbox controller. You can stream your Forza 5 or whatever. You know? So
that's cool.
You know, I think that's a cool option. I mean, I've been doing it for the last few years, just you know, remote playing my PS4, and I've loved it. So
that's what I was going to say. I really like how Sony does this, where they just are like, if you have the game and you have a PS4, it's just coming to you from your PS4. That's cool to me.
Right.
Steam actually just announced as of today's recording that they're going to let you stream games from your PC at home to, like, well, right now it's your Steam Link and your mobile device, only Android right now. But like, that's cool. Like, that's the kind of streaming I'm interested in. I don't have to have a separate cloud gaming service. You know, like, it's my copy of the game. It's just coming to me over my internet. And I know there are limitations to that, like it will never be as fast as like Google's cloud service or Microsoft's, but I don't know. I like it better. I like the idea better than like just subscribing to games. I don't want to subscribe to all my games. You know what I mean? I want to own some games. Does that make sense?
Right, right.
So I hope it never replaces owning games.
And this is why owning the copies digitally is so awesome, because when you remote play in, you have your whole library there, as opposed to like, oh dang, I wish someone was there to put in the Red Dead disc.
Well, see, now here's the thing though, we're getting into a gray area, and I probably shouldn't even bring this up since we have such limited time, but I'm going to do it anyway because YOLO. Am I right, guys? YOLO, do kids still say that?
I think.
Okay.
Maybe.
I hope so. But but now, buying games digitally, we're getting into that whole, do you actually own that game or are you just purchasing a license for it? Because at any given time, Sony could shut down its PlayStation 4 store and I can't, like PT, for example, we had that game and now we don't have that game.
So true.
So anyway, we're getting into a weird area where physical media is becoming less prominent and we're not really owning things. We're just kind of buying licenses for them, and it's I don't know how I feel about it. It's weird.
Yeah, so that story of course came courtesy of Know It Man, one of our top newsmen. Number one top newsman
this week,
Ultimate Kills. Ultimate Kills top newsman says Days Gone is changing minds for the better.
Oh,
now the embargo lifted last week on
preview stuff.
The Days Gone preview coverage. There was a preview event that a lot of industry folks went to. They got to play about 5 hours of the game.
Nice.
They could do whatever they wanted, go in any direction. So a lot of people came away from that very impressed, which is really cool. I've been optimistic about this game, even though I think a lot of people were very cautiously optimistic at best on this one.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And maybe hating on it at worst.
That's kind of how I've been, is cautiously optimistic. I haven't played it, obviously, but the stuff I've seen looks okay. It doesn't look like the most mind-blowing thing I've ever seen, but it looks all right.
Yeah, so, I mean, Mr. Greg Miller of Kinda Funny Games came away and said, quote, it is a hell of a game.
Hey, language.
I know. that was him speaking, not me.
Oh, okay, it
was
a quote. I see.
It doesn't count.
Gotcha.
But but yeah, so that is that's pretty high praise. I mean, yeah. That's he said it kind of scratched that Ubisoft, Assassin's Creed, big open world, tons of stuff to do, you know, a lot going on, kind of check boxes. And so, yeah, I'm interested. I'm very interested in that game. From what I've seen, it looks cool. I mean, I think what a lot of people were coming away from the preview events saying was that the story actually is super strong in the first, you know, few hours.
That's good.
And it's supposed to be about a 30-hour campaign if you mainlined it. With like, I think they said 20% of that is cutscenes. So it's story heavy.
Yeah.
It is a story heavy game.
Well, they hired a Hollywood actor. What's that guy's name?
Sam Witwer.
Sam Witwer. He's actually the voice of Darth Maul nowadays. But he's also been in movies like The Fog. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's a good actor.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about how he's done an amazing job. All the performances are really good. So I'm really curious to see what the response is like next month when that comes out.
Nice.
But anyway, moving along, I think the last thing I wanted to touch on was something we kind of already mentioned, but I don't think we called out specifically. iOS remote play.
Yes.
Thoughts, feelings,
it
excitement.
Works pretty well.
It works pretty well.
I haven't tried it on my iPad.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I haven't tried yet is trying to pair a PS4 controller to my iPad.
I don't think you can.
There's got to be a way. Got to be. I mean, maybe you have to like jailbreak it to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, you might.
But that would be very nice if I could just prop up the iPad Pro. And then just, you know, that's the size of a TV or a laptop screen almost.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
Yeah. I'd have to Google things and we've already done that once this show. So we're tapped out.
We already passed that part of the show.
I'm like 75% sure you can't pair Xbox and PlayStation controllers to the iPad natively.
Oh, oh, man.
I'm so sad.
Yeah, that is very sad.
Yeah.
I'm so, so sad.
What are you gonna do?
Not use it. That's what I'm gonna do.
It's got on-screen touch controls, David.
Nobody wants that. I mean, I guess unless you're playing like a puzzle game, you could do it on The Witness.
Well, it's exactly what I did, and it works great.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, well, that we need to move on. There are a million more news stories. Thank you guys for submitting them on reddit.com/r/sbfvgs, where you can submit all of your news stories that you want to hear discussed on the show. Good times. Moving along, I do need to mention Patreon, folks.
Okay.
Patreon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Patreon.
Yeah, in 2019, as we know, $1 now gets you early access to the episodes, typically 1 to 3 days ahead of the street date. $2 backing us per month gets you access to our Patreon exclusive minisodes, which I must say, I am awfully proud of how silly and stupid some of these Patreon minisodes
are. They are a delight.
They are a delight for us.
Yeah.
And we've been getting a lot of good feedback from you guys on those. I'm glad you're enjoying them. Thank you guys for backing us if you're already listening to those. And if you're not, back us at the $2 level.
Yeah.
It's a pittance. It's not, you can't even get a cup of coffee
you
these
can't.
Days at a Starbucks.
Especially not in New York City. You know? But I just want to say, I know this is maybe tooting my own horn a little bit, but I think the best stuff we've ever made are the mini games. Something about the time limit that we have, and
yeah, maybe.
And I kind of love, because we tend to not only talk about video games there. Like we've done mm-hmm. ghost episodes where we talk about like hauntings and you know like ideas for getting rid of the ghosts or keeping the ghosts, whatever you want. We've done dating advice, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. We've done dating advice in Mass Effect, which was ridiculous and fun. one of our best shows ever. And so if you want to hear them.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We love it. And we think you'll enjoy it too.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have the extra $2, that's fantastic. And I'm thinking maybe we need to do a minisode that's, you know, free to all at some point. And then, you know, everyone kind of gets a feel for what it is.
Eventually, you know? We should start releasing the minisodes like, you know, like a year later or something like that.
Ooh, heavens.
Yeah. The thought?
It's a thought.
Heavens to Betsy.
Yeah.
So, of course, $5 gets you access to the video archive and live streams of our recording sessions. You could be watching right now, hanging out in the chat, sending us messages, you know, good times. So hop in there.
Yeah.
If you care to back us, that is the best way to support the show. Help us hit that next Patreon goal, which would be the live monthly live streamed community game nights. So we play a game with you, the audience, having a good time, being friends, high-fiving, and, you know,
it's
enjoying life.
What we're doing
so.
The whole time. We're just high-fiving the whole time we're playing games.
there's a lot of high-fiving. All right, this episode we welcome Mr. Jim Guthrie, musician and composer, known well in the indie game scene for his work on Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP, Woo. Indie Game the Movie, and most recently, Below. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good
so
times,
cool.
good times. We are honored.
Yes. We've talked about your work before on the show, for sure.
I would say many times.
Many times.
So just to kick it off, could you give us kind of a quick musical history leading up to you getting into media composing and games?
Oh, man, how far back do I go? It's long and boring. No, I mean...
Well, no, we want to hear. That's why you're here, you know?
I'm self-taught, so, you know, I started just playing guitar and everything when I was a teenager, and I didn't really think that I could... you know, compose, you know, ever, you know, when I was that young, you know, when you're, yeah, I was just sort of angsty and I wanted to rock out. And so, you know, I kind of did that. And, you know, I started off doing more of like a singer songwriter thing, played in lots of bands in my hometown of, Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
Which is like nice. An hour from Toronto, which,
oh, gotcha.
Which is where I am now.
Okay.
Yeah, so I grew up in Guelph and yeah, played in lots of bands, played like in like hardcore and math rock bands and nice. Sort of cool. did a lot of my own sort of acoustic stuff. Yeah, like wrote lots of songs and made albums and yeah, played in different bands and toured. And then, but I was always broke, totally broke, yeah. you know, and but I did it forever. Like I really just, I never really had a plan B. You know, mm-hmm. so, I finished like high school and I was going to go to college and then I didn't. And then I just started rocking and rolling. And then,
as well, you should, as
yeah.
well, you should.
Yeah. Too. I mean, I didn't really know what else I was going to do. And
yeah,
I just kind of went all in. And so it wasn't until like my late 20s, early 30s. Like, I'd been doing music for a while and had some success, but nothing really that paid the bills, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing music for advertising.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of a weird one. I just had friends in the business or friends who were, like, filmmakers who did ads on the side. Mm-hmm. And I got asked to do this... I got asked to do a couple ads, but one of the first ones was this one that was kind of known as... Hands in My Pocket.
Okay.
And it's it's like a Capital One ad when they launched here in Canada.
Nice.
And you can Google it. It's called Hands in My Pocket. And it kind of went viral before viral was viral, I guess. Like back in 2008 or 2010 or I don't know when it was, but it did really well and I had no idea. And I sort of just totally made it up. It was like a crazy sort of anti-jingle almost, like
nice.
Okay.
And it was just a real shock that I could do that and it did well and I got asked to do lots more.
I see a comment on the YouTube video, the catchiest commercial of all time, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean it was totally out of nowhere in a lot of ways, and I did all of that like in like, I got my first Mac when I was, like, 26, and it was, like, an eMac.
Okay.
Back before, yeah, it was, like, the really cheap Mac that you could get. And I did all my ad stuff back then in a GarageBand.
Mm-hmm.
And, nice. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, it was totally bare bones.
But it worked.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I made it work and I started to make a living doing that. I was still trying to play in bands. And then eventually Craig Adams, who's the creator of Sword and Sorcery, he also knew my stuff actually long before that. I guess he knew my sort of solo music.
Oh, cool.
And he got in touch with me. He sent me a postcard in the mail.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I love that. It's like, it's so, in this day and age, the postcard is so underused, I think.
I don't think I've gotten a postcard in like 25 years at this point. You know?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was a postcard with his, it was like, it had some of his art on it. It was like the his sort of early, his early work doing like the pixel stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was really lo-fi looking. It was really, really awesome. Anyways, he just said, hey, I love your stuff. And we just ended up sharing art and music. I think this is like in 2002 or 2003.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like this is long before the ad stuff, actually. So, but then we stayed in touch over the years. And then, yeah, I started doing ad stuff and film and TV and just started doing like work where I got paid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a new sensation.
Yeah, when you're making music, most times, like you said, you're just broke. You're just broke.
I mean, honestly, yeah, I went from being 15, you know, 15, 16, all the way up until my like 30s almost, and I was making nothing. But I didn't really see it like that as much. But now when I look back, yeah, I was like broke, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never really considered it like a sacrifice or like. I didn't really complain too much, I don't think. I was actually having fun, and it was good. Mm-hmm. It was a really good thing for me. I just made lots of music. And then eventually, just through knowing Craig, when he, you know, thought he was going to make this game, and, yeah, he just kind of pulled me in at some point, and I started working in games all of a sudden, you know? And I never thought I would do that as well, so... Yeah, it's kind of hard to totally put it all together, but it was really slow for me, honestly. I'd been making music my entire life, kind of DIY styles, and then just through, you know, just because I did it every day of my life for many, many years, just things started to work out eventually, and I met lots of cool people and started to work in all these different spaces.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I sort of have been able to keep that up.
That's great.
Yeah, 20 years or something. Awesome. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. Before Sword and Sorcery, and we had kind of talked about this in the emails before recording here, but I had never really heard music in a game that was so specifically right up my alley personally. So I was really curious, kind of who would you consider to be some of your musical influences?
You know, oh man, it's so vast and wide. It's... I don't know, you know, I like a lot of the kind of stereotypical soundtrack, synthy kind of stuff, like John Carpenter and...
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm kind of like an indie rock kid. Like, I grew up listening to, like, Pavement and Dinosaur Jr. and Ween and like, Sebadoh. And I like, you know, lots of American indie rock from the early 90s.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, you know, like, I'm not really a composer's composer. I don't actually know a ton of composers, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, I feel like there are two kind of very different types of composers. I mean, there are many different types of composers, but they fall into, two big categories. Like, you got your classical guys, and then you got your cool indie guys. And I feel like, I guess I didn't realize that the second category even existed for the longest time.
Yeah.
So...
And I didn't either. Like, and I'll tell you, like, when I did Sword and Sorcery, I was sort of like, I had no idea. And maybe I'm wrong, but at the time, I had no idea that not many people like hired like people who made music like in the sort of indie way that they hired, like that I was hired to do it on the game. I thought there was a million people sort of doing the same thing, but it sort of turned out that like. People like me making music for games. Like it was kind of relatively new in 2010. And when I did like the vinyl release, that was kind of a new thing too. But for me, like, you know, I'm like an indie rock guy and you just want to have all your stuff on like vinyl if you can do it, right? You just want to put all your music out. because that's what like rock bands do, or that's what you do.
Yeah, that's how you know you've made it, when you have a vinyl.
Yeah, and so I always just wanted to have all my stuff on vinyl, because that was just the best feeling in the world. So when I did all that, it was kind of like, that's just where I came from. But it ended up being sort of kind of a new thing for a lot of people in the games world, and it was kind of novel or something. So I think that kind of helped me as well. I just think people got excited for those reasons, I guess. And I'm not trained. I'm not, like, I don't know anything about classical music or doing anything classically in the sort of classic sense or whatever. But I'm pretty scrappy, but it seemed to work.
I like that. That's a good word.
You know, it seemed to work for me, and it always has worked for me. You know, I've been able to sort of find my groove in lots of different projects, so I've been really lucky that way.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Cool. Could you talk a little bit about your affinity for making music using a PlayStation 1 and the MTV Music Generator?
Yes, sir. Oh, well, man. That actually was probably my first stab at doing computer music, because like I never had a computer growing up, and like my parents didn't, and I never made computer music or whatever. You know, I always did stuff on like tape cassettes. Those were like, that's how I got all my ideas down in the sort of 90s and even into the 2000s. So I didn't get a computer forever, but I did have a PlayStation 1 long after they were a thing. Like, I guess maybe like the PS2 had been out for a few years.
Yeah.
And I got a PS1 for free from a friend. And then I think it's like PlayStation Magazine or something, they used to have like a demo disc.
I remember that.
You know, and one of the demo games in it was this, you know, music maker, this like MTV music generator. And I got the magazine, and you could maybe make like a minute of music, or I don't know what it was, but I loved it. It was like, it was my first stab at like, you know, like sequenced music, like a, you know, this like grid, and you have like 24 tracks sort of. It's not really track. It's a really weird, creative, like piece of software. You know, it's really like limiting, but it's really amazing if you can sort of really dig in and kind of like bend the rules a little bit. Like you can really make it go, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
So anyways, yeah, like I used that for a bit, and then when the full game came out, I guess a few months later, I bought it, and I just dove right in. It was like really right up my alley, because it was just kind of weird and quirky, and it was kind of it was all I had, you know, in a lot of ways to make sequenced music. I didn't have a computer or anything. So, and I guess this is probably like 99 or 98 or it was late 90s, because I hadn't moved to Toronto yet. I moved to Toronto in 2000, and this is. Yeah, this is late 90s. I don't know what.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. So,
yeah. So I'm kind of an old guy, but like, yeah, I was.
Trust me, we all are. It's fine. You're in good company.
Very, very old.
Yeah. Like I was a full grown man playing with the MTV music generator.
I love it.
Now, do you still use it for any projects?
You know, I still do. I haven't really plugged it in a bit, but. I've been meaning to get it back out. Like, I have all of these like memory cards, because you know you have to store your.
Oh my gosh!
You have to store your song progress or the songs that you make.
No hard drives.
Yeah, there was no hard drives, right? So you had to. Yeah. So basically, like a song, one song or a couple songs would fit on one card.
Oh man!
And so I literally have like 40 or 50 memory cards.
Goodness,
that's fantastic! That's
But I bought them all when nobody cared about, you know, like you could just buy them for like a buck or whatever somewhere, because nobody gave a about
that.
That's
incredible.
So I wonder if I can. They're around here somewhere, but yeah, I guess if this is a video podcast. I used to make it on this. Little PS1 with the screen.
Oh, that's there, so cool.
Oh, nice.
So this is what I would use when I would go on tour. Like I would, this was my laptop basically, because I didn't own a laptop in like 2001.
You know, I actually forgot that they made that version of the PS1. It looks like it's got a little screen, like a laptop.
And... Yeah, well, actually, it's just this part, and then this is a totally different thing you can buy that screws on.
Yeah, it's like like a peripheral. Oh, that's amazing. That's wild.
So, anyways, yeah, I would use this, but if you want a sort of a hot tip, a hot pro tip, is
please dish it out.
See, this, because of, I guess, the way that this was manufactured or the construction of this, it's really, really noisy. Like, when you go to do the, you know, the audio capture, the left and right, it's super, you can hear the disc spinning and it's really, really noisy. So you get this buzzing. So I would compose on here just because it was really handy. But then when I actually went to transfer it, I have like three or four other old PlayStations that have the RCA outs. The kind of like bigger, older ones, because it's a lot quieter. They just had like better. They're made, I guess, better back in the first gen.
Better plating or something on the.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but they're just like really quiet, and you just get what you want, you know. And you don't get all this like whirring of the CD.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So yeah, so I would write on this, and then when I would go to export, I had to do it in real time. You know, I couldn't just like. Dump it. I had to hit play.
Oh my goodness.
Record into my DAW or whatever.
That's awesome.
So anyways, I used to play this live. I would play like guitar along with it. And
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I didn't do it a ton because I didn't really have a band at one point when I was sort of still making indie rock. So I tried to transpose a lot of my songs over to the PlayStation. And then that's how I would play live.
So they were like your backing band, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But it was, it sounds really cool, but I think it was really lame. Like, I think everybody, just sort of like clapped because they felt sorry for me or something. They're just like, he's so lonely up there.
I just imagine like, you know, busting out some of those sounds that are probably built into this software become kind of one of your instruments in your mind, right? Like that later you're like, oh, I want that sound, that one sound from the PlayStation game.
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, yeah, it has a bunch of like prefab canned beats and stuff and like,
yeah,
like scratches and like people doing like shout outs and toasting and like really lame samples.
Well, that's amazing.
But then it also just has a suite of just cool synth sounds, you know, just like, you know, like your basic bass sounds and synth pads and things like that. So if you kind of dig through all the kind of crappy sample stuff and get to just the sort of sounds themselves or whatever, and you use those to build your song, it can make some pretty cool stuff for sure.
That's amazing. I love it.
Then just when you feel frisky, you add in the
exactly when I want to just let her rip. That's right.
Awesome. Oh, man. Okay, so I wanted to ask, how did you first meet the Super Brothers and Capybara Games? And I guess you kind of touched on that a bit, like that, you know, you were just kind of randomly solicited one day. But I guess that's kind of that word is loaded. You were reached out to.
It all started with a postcard.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it really did. I did. Touch on it before. I was lucky because I was doing the indie rock thing for so long, and it turns out that a bunch of the guys at Cappy actually listened to my solo records. Like, they went on their first date. Like, they told me stories about, like, going on dates and stuff when my records were playing in the background, or like,
wow,
that's cool.
That's great.
Something like that. It was, like, really, like, I was, like, super, you know, like, flattered that... Yeah, they just knew my stuff before.
Yeah, that's
cool.
And
it was sort of like in their life. Like, it was like the soundtrack to their life kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And I was like super blown away. So when Craig got in touch with me, and then I think there's a story. It's on the internet. Like, people, they've told this story before. Like, I guess everybody was drunk at some event, and Cappy was just like, Craig, we want to make a game with you because you're amazing. And Craig was like, if... you know, you want me to make a game, I want Jim to do the music. And they're like, we love Jim, let's make a game. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was just this...
life-changing decisions.
Yeah, just a bunch of drunk boys just slobbering all over each other, you know, telling each other that we love each other. And we just got really excited and, started to make this game. So,
I find that, you know, after one drink... or two drinks, I have kind of a general love for all of mankind. Absolutely. The more I drink, the more I drink, the more focused it gets on one person.
Oh. Yeah, no, that'll happen. You just got to be careful. You just got to be careful. That's all.
Jim, I freaking love you, man. That's it would get there.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. It's fun. It's you know, and it never really started. You know, I don't even think I really signed a contract with them for, you know, a long time. Like, we just sort of started making the game as friends sort of thing, you know, and that's what's really great about Cappy is they're all a bunch of really great people, and it doesn't feel like a business transaction. Mm-hmm. It's like we're all trying to make art, you know, and Craig's an incredible guy to work with as well.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was super lucky to meet those guys because they taught me so much about games, you know. I didn't really know games could be art before I met them. Like, I kind of had a feeling that it could be, and I kind of knew it in my heart, but you know, I just was sort of introduced to indie gaming in a way that I didn't really know of before I met them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was sort of, it was sort of early on. I mean, there was other people obviously before them, but, you know, and games were sort of considered just not whatever serious or,
Like, especially people in other forms of media always love to, like, talk down about games, like, you know, it'll never be movies, it'll never be Broadway, you know.
Yeah, right. It was still sort of for kids and back in the sort of, like, Nintendo days. And
yeah, exactly.
It wasn't really taken seriously, and, you know, like, obviously now it's all over the place and people make a living doing it, and it's this great sort of medium that we can all enjoy.
So much money gets made in gaming now. Like,
oh, yeah.
Whether or not it's art, which is a whole debate that's still going on. I believe it is. But whether or not, like, it's still, like, a legitimate, like, form of entertainment that everyone, like, most people accept, unless you're, like, my parents. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We won't get into that.
I wanted to get into the hard-hitting questions here, Jim. Are the Super Brothers really even brothers? Ooh. Are we blowing the lid off a scandal right now?
I think they're bros. Yeah, they're total bros. I mean, there's bro. I don't know. You know, I wish I could just riff on that, but I don't know. I tried and then I stopped. But yeah, I would just say yes. I'll just say yes.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're right. Actually related, they're still brothers, basically.
Okay. I get it. I'm with you. I'm tracking. All right. So just thinking of kind of the process of Super Brothers, to take it way back, you know, did you have concept art or story beats to work from? Like, what was the process as far as that for you?
That's a good question.
You know, actually, it actually sort of started with some old music that I had made.
Okay.
And, you know, when Craig got into that mode and asked me to sort of be a part of it, he actually gravitated toward some of the PlayStation stuff that I had done a long time ago.
Oh.
That was one of the things that we had sort of exchanged when he first sent me the postcard. I sent him a CD in the mail of all this wacky PlayStation music that I had made in the late 90s or in early 2000. Like, So I sent them that stuff, and he really loved it. And, you know, maybe three or four of those tracks ended up being on the soundtrack.
Wow. Okay.
So it kind of partially started there for Craig. And then once we got into it, Craig would send art or screenshots or just, like, you know, whatever he was working on. And I would just sink into this deep depression, just being like, how am I ever going to come up with something that sounds as good as that looks? You know, like,
oh, man.
Yeah.
I was just so blown away by the art style and the look of it and everything. And it was my first game, and I kind of would have panic attacks and just be like, I suck. And, you know, but that was a good motivator, too. You know, I mean, I'm always like that when I do music. I'm just like, what I get myself into, you know? And then just that whole, like, you know, like, fear of the blank
page. Imposter syndrome kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, we just had it was a good back and forth. Sometimes the art would inform, or they would have something in the game that they knew that they wanted would have certain beats or certain, would kind of have a certain pace. And then I would come up with music that would fit that. and sometimes it wouldn't work, and it might end up being the music that's in a, you know, in another scene or something, mm-hmm. you know, like it was a real like kind of liquid. It just kind of, we just kind of flowed back and forth and just made things that worked. And if they didn't, we found another home for them, or if they, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. It was just, yeah. And then sometimes my music would inspire certain aspects of the game. And
that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was so yeah. long ago now, it's kind of hard to remember everything. And I've told, you know, like different stories over the years, and I've made some things up that have become true now. And I just, I don't know what's real and what's not anymore. So
that's awesome.
Those are the best stories.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to fast forward then to after the game releases, what was kind of your reaction to the fan response for Sword and Sorcery, having that be your first game and then have it kind of blow up the way it did?
Yeah, I mean, that was nothing I'd ever experienced. Like, I've been making music for a really long time, and I had played lots of rock and roll shows, you know, touring and done, and just I'd never had the response that people had, yeah, for the game soundtrack. You know, I put it up on Bandcamp and iTunes and all that stuff, and people just bought a whole bunch of it really fast.
Oh yeah, I was one of those. So cool. I bought it for sure.
Yeah,
I had never experienced that, and it was so freaky. I felt like I was like that scene in the movie where it's just like, I don't know, you sort of like turn and you look at your phone and all these things are coming up from all these sales, and you're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, it seriously freaked me out. Like, I'd never experienced the sort of love and the immediacy of like the internet, you know, just sort of being like, bloop, here's the thing. And all these people click on it all at once, and they all kind of celebrate it in a very short period of time. And you kind of experience that real time. And that, you know, this was like 2011 or whenever it was. Mm-hmm. So I had never experienced that in the music scene, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there was a real love going on in the sort of game space that I hadn't really experienced before.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was really blown away. Yeah, it actually really changed my life. Like, I just had never had that before and been able to, yeah, make a living like that, you know, and just,
yeah,
like,
right.
Here's the thing I did. And, yeah, like when I think back, I mean, it's kind of old news to me now, it's kind of just something, but when I really get back into that space, it was a really big deal for me for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So, you know, before and since Sword and Sorcery, you know, you've released quite a few albums. For someone who may not be familiar with your other musical projects, I was curious, kind of, what would you say is a good place to start to check out this record or that one?
You know, I guess, like, Now More Than Ever was a big one for me, too, like, before. But that one I had made with a band, you know, and it has, like, strings, and it's, like, these bigger arrangements, and it's sort of... Yeah, and I got like nominated for a Juno in Canada, which is like a Grammy, you know, a Canadian Grammy kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so that was like sort of, I might say start with that just because that's one that people seem to like back in the day. This was like 2004 late 2003 I released that album.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, and that's kind of just singer-songwriter like band stuff. But yeah, I mean, I've sort of made so much different music, and it's kind of every record was really weird and different for me. And I sort of feel like that was partially one of the reasons why I maybe kind of struggled in the beginning, because I sort of didn't really have a sound, I guess, or like my sound was, I was just sort of like one of those scrappy lo-fi kind of guys. And I did that for a long time, and then when I did Now More Than Ever, it was a bit more polished with some string arrangements and stuff like that. So, I sort of feel like for some people that was the first record they heard from me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say maybe start there if you know, but if you want the instrumental stuff, I'd just say go right for Sword and Sorcery.
I need to say my favorite song on the Sword and Sorcery soundtrack is Unknowable Geometry.
Oh yeah.
I just love that, like, that there's like a rhythm, like a pounding rhythm, and like it's one of the most memorable parts of the game, you know, and I just had to nerd out about it for a second.
Yeah, you know what, and that was a really cool one, because that was one where like I didn't have anything, you know, and they said, okay, we know we're going to have a battle and we want to do it so like the song kind of pushes the battle forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a way. So it was like, that was one of the ones where like they, you know, it had to start with them and they kind of dictated that like sort of like the terms and how they mm-hmm. wanted it to play out. And I just had to come up with something that fit.
Yeah.
For them, you know, so that was a real...
It felt like a collaboration.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, totally. Yeah. That was a real it was big really collab.
Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, you know, of course, we to flash forward, we have now Below is out. And, you know, over the course of 5 years, you worked with Capybara Games on Below. Could you just talk a little bit about how that extended writing and composing timeframe impacted that final product?
Yeah, I mean, it started off, I've talked about this before as well, like I had, you know, when I started working on that way back, it was, you know, I had it in my head that it was going to be sort of more, sort of like sword and sorcery, like, mm-hmm. you know, in a musical sense. But as the more I worked on the game and the longer the game sort of dragged on, we were trying lots of different things and the art style changed and lots of things changed over the years, and it seemed like the sort of music that I needed to make needed to be more sort of like atmospheric and less like beat and like melody driven, you know, gotcha. And sort of more a bit more ambient and a little more sort of like fit the space, you know, and we didn't really want to overly score anything either. We didn't want to be like, you know, now you're fighting, so here's the fighting music. It was just always this, right. These sort of like cloudy moments, these kind of dark and like kind of pretty clouds, you know, drones and tones of it's kind of spooky, beautiful, sad, you know, like melancholic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like sort of like atmospheric music that seemed to be what worked. You know, the more I made that, the more it just sort of seemed to work. And so that's kind of what we went with in the end. But it kind of took a long time to get to that point, you know, just lots of trial and error, I guess. So
that's cool.
So, yeah, I mean, from the sound of it, experimentation really seems to be part of a big part of your process. And so I was kind of curious if you have any new, old or strange things you've tried out to get the right sound or mood.
I would say the one of the things I tried on Below that I really liked a lot was I used an old tape, what do you call it, 4-track machine.
Oh, okay.
So this is kind of an old technique that I saw a YouTube video on. I think it was like a Vangelis tour video. A guy who used to tour with Vangelis, he had a live setup where he had all these drones that he recorded on a 4-track. So like 4 separate tracks would have a separate drone on each track. And there would be like a different note, you know? So he created these notes somehow, you know, maybe on a synthesizer or whatever. I used actually this Super Ego pedal.
Oh, cool. Nice.
That makes like, it's like a granular synth thing. It kind of grabs, it'll grab a signal and just sort of stretch it out, you know, kind of forever.
This episode's brought to you by Electroharmonics.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, so this was a great tool for me. So I used this to make the drones, and then I would record the drones for like half an hour on a tape cassette on each track of the 4-track.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would play the 4-track back and run it through a bunch of pedals, and you would sort of fade up the faders, like kind of bring up a fader for one note, you know, and then put it through a bunch of reverb, so it kind of creates these really lush, nice, smooth, you know, swells.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you just sort of ride it like that. You kind of bring up one note and then another, and you just
play those. You're playing the faders.
Yeah, exactly. Huh? That's all it is. You just get a thing that, I mean, you can do it on a computer too, but it's just kind of takes a little longer, or I'm not sure how you do it, but
it's not as tactile probably.
Yeah, it's just really organic, and it's just a really great fun way to sort of experiment with, yeah, like ambient drones. So
that is cool.
That was a cool one for me because I hadn't really done that before, but I had all the things here to do it. And then when I saw that video, I was just like, I'm totally doing that. Like that is happening right now. So, so yeah, that was a really cool one for me personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. So, you know, I just have one more question, then we can let you go. I'm just curious about, you know, aside from super secret stuff, do you have any, what's next for you? What's next for Jim?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I honestly have so many game projects lined up that are, you know, there's nothing too epic, but they're all really great indie games that I'm really excited to be a part of. And I, you know, as a self-employed guy, you kind of say yes to anything that, or, you know, you just want to be able to keep working. So you say yes to lots of projects and you sort of feel like they're going to, you know, hopefully, you know, one will end and another one will start and you kind of hope that there's no, it just doesn't all kind of bottleneck.
Right.
So yeah. I've been, but games don't always sort of happen on time. I am really busy working on a couple different things at once, but it's, you know, it's really fun to wake up and be like, I feel more like playing the guitar and I have a project that kind of feeds that, or I want to do more synth and I have a project that feeds that. So it's it's really nice to be able to do that. But other than that, you know, I don't know. I don't have a lot planned, really. I just like to sit in a room very quietly and pet my cat for a while.
That's, you know, that sounds like a really good plan.
A solid plan. That's what I'll be doing directly after this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can do that almost anytime, but I would like to have an extended period where I actually don't know what my next thing is, you know, because right now it's really, you know, I mean, I love what I do, and I would rather have a bad day doing this than a great day working at the bank or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I'm really lucky to do what I do, but I am looking forward to a time when I'm not doing it for a bit, you know? Because I find that, and I, you know, maybe you guys feel the same way about when you are working on your stuff or whatever, like, you know, I can't listen to other music while I'm making my own music, and I'm making my own music all the time. So all I really listen to is my own music.
That's so interesting.
So, I mean, I do try and like refuel every once in a while and just listen to something while I clean the studio or do the dishes or whatever. Yeah. But I just find I don't have a lot of time to consume other people's music.
That's an interesting problem. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's not all bad, but, I'd love to have more downtime where I'm just not making music, where I'm just listening, you know, I'd like to listen to other people a bit more. So that would be great. I would actually love to be doing more nothing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I can totally
my dream.
Relate. I'm not a musician. I do visual effects for a living, which is another kind of art form. Like, it's different. I can look at other movies, you know, when I'm not working, but it's a little different in that way, but I still 100% understand, like, I wouldn't want to do anything else for a living, but every now and then I'm so ready to not work for a little while, you know, like I'm freelance so I can like take time off and like, you know, I'm looking forward to like a 6 month period where I'm just like, this is my time, you know, like,
And I feel it coming. But I think, it's just, I have to get through a couple projects and I'm just going to sit and watch the world go by for a little bit. I think
sounds a good plan. Sounds wonderful.
That sounds good. Everyone needs some vacation here and there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's awesome, man. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim. It has been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
So, end of the show plugs for all. And I guess, first off, what's the best way to keep up with you, Jim, online?
You know, I think the only thing I really care about is Twitter, just because it's the easiest. So, I'm at Jam Pants.
This is my favorite Twitter
Jam Pants. That's amazing.
Yeah, Jam Pants. I tried to get when I got Twitter back in 2008.
Wow, that's going way back.
Yeah, I tried to get Jim Jam.
Jim Jam.
And it was taken, and I was kind of upset because, like,
heartbroken. Yeah,
yeah. Like people, when I was a kid, my grandma, just like people in my family, called me Jim Jam. So I tried to get that, and I couldn't get it. And I tried a couple of variations on it, and nothing worked. And I was like, screw this. Nobody has jam pants, right? And so I typed that in, you know, and sure enough, nobody had jam pants. So I took jam pants.
I love it. All right. So, yeah, definitely follow Jam Pants.
Yeah. So, yeah, just Twitter, and then you'll find everything else you need to find, I think.
All right. Awesome. And then, of course, part of the reason we've been talking so much about Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery is in celebration of the vinyl release of Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery LP Ballad of the Space Babies Super Deluxe Edition, which is available on im8bit.com. And you should go there and you should buy that record because it's glorious.
That's right. It's I'll just say quick, it's the first time that all the music has been on like vinyl for the first time, because I have been selling vinyl for it up until now, but it only had like, I think, like 14 songs on the vinyl, because I only had like one slab, because when I first made vinyl, I couldn't afford to make a big double record. I didn't know it was gonna even be a thing that people wanted to buy. Mm-hmm. So I sort of made the best version I could of it that was like, you know, like a single slab of vinyl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's how I sold it forever. And then when you would buy it, you would get like the digital, and that had the whole album, had all like 27 tracks. But now we're doing a double. This is the double version that has all 27 tracks with a bunch of remixes.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of remixes from like C418, Lena Rain, Samuel Webster, Dose did lots of really great remixes. And it's like Glow in the Dark. It's a really fantastic package. I'm super lucky and pumped to just have this be a thing in my life.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Gorgeous.
All right, yeah, so that is I Am 8-Bit, 8 being the numeral 8. I am 8-bit.com. So go pick one of those up and support Jim here.
Yeah, good times. I'm buying one. Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Kyle. I'm gonna click the button in just a second. Me too. So,
all right, and so certainly, if you like gaming and co-op gaming, you should check out our buddies at the Cooperatives. This is a nerdy couple who hosts chill streams 3 times a week from 7 p.m. Central to 9:30 p.m. Right now, friend of the show, Miss Maya is playing Apex Legends, Rainbow Six Siege, and some more.
Yeah.
Various things, good times, mixing it up.
I actually appeared on one of their streams as a third wheel, because, you know, they're a couple, and then I was by myself, so you know, it was fun. They're really fun, and they're both really good at games, so they carried me.
Friends of the show and supporters of this show, so go check them out. That's a good time. Also, of course, you can keep up with us at sbfvgs.com. That's where you can find links to our episodes, our social media, our Twitch channel, merchandise, and more. If you like what we do, you like to see us doing more of it, the best way is to support the show are by supporting on patreon.com/sbfvgs, subscribing on twitch.tv/sbfvgs, or just leaving a delightful iTunes review and telling a friend, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Keep it simple.
Super helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. A very special thanks to Eric Kruger for our podcast logo and for his handsome face.
Mm-hmm.
And for, of course, being producer tier. You can follow us on Twitter at SBFVGS Podcast. I'm on there, Barry White. That's BURYWITE. Mike is Taco Douglas. David is David J. Tate. And of course, Jim is Jam Pants. So feel free to send me a PSN friend request. I'm Barry White on PSN as well. Play some Apex together. Play whatever suits your fancy. You know, I mean, whatever suits my fancy.
Whatever suits Adam's fancy. Adam, you can't make Adam play a game he doesn't want to play. Sorry. He won't do it.
David has tried for many years to get me into Destiny.
Yep.
All right. And that's all the time we have for Super Best Friends Video Game Sleepover episode 117. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back every 2 weeks with more glorious indie podcast episodes and talk on gaming. Hit us up with your questions, topics, or musings if you want to be part of the show. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
See you guys.
And then just give me like a beat before you like say, let's do this or whatever.
Okay, break it down.
Not that kind of beat. Hang on. Look at Mike grooving to it.
Okay, we're ready.
All right.
It's a now, dumb show.
Was that a fat enough beat, though, David? Or do I need to go fatter?
I really wanted a sick beat, not a fat beat.
Ooh. What if I start dropping that dirt nasty bass on you while we're at it?
Can you drop a beat and give us a sick nasty bass line at the same time?
Just straight dirt nasty bass and beat. It's like wow.
That's so good. It's very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, now we're ready to start.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.